My dream is to be able to take titanium, steel, and forge weld them together. And this would be a fusion of ultra-modern space-age technology and several thousand-year-old blacksmithing history that just tickles me in all of the right kind of ways. Recently, we have been experimenting with making titanium Damascus. Two different grades of titanium, diffusion bonded together. The results have been phenomenal, but we're not gonna stop there because my end goal is to be able to make a beautiful blade with a titanium Damascus jacket and a high carbon steel core for the edge. I've combed through dozens of papers and books on the science of diffusion bonding, and despite that, we still don't have a clear answer on how this is possible, and so today, we have to find out. Proof of concept is good. We need five more. Put an E on the end of steel. I've made up all of these boxes so that once we put our steel and titanium in, we can seal them up and pump inert argon gas through so that at the high temperatures, neither the steel or the titanium will react with the oxygen in the air, causing oxides that will stop them from sticking. I made six of them because we've got six experiments to run, but I think it's time for us to figure out what diffusion bonding is. As I explained in part two of trying to make titanium Damascus, after 15 years of forge welding steel in a blacksmith workshop, I finally discovered the scientific name for the process and worked out a little bit of what's happening at an atomic level. So we've got two pieces of, say, steel that we want to be able to join together, though they may look flat, in fact, when we zoom in, they're not. Even if you think you've got a great surface finish, close in enough, they are only touching at what is called the asperities.
The high points.
And what's more, there's a nasty old oxide layer, which means the atoms of the actual material aren't touching, which is what you need for them to diffuse across the joint interface. And so, when you heat the metal to something like 70% of its melting temperature, it's easily able to experience plastic deformation as pressure is applied. That deformation shatters the brittle oxides and sends them on their way. The amount of true metal-to-metal contact increases, and eventually across the joint, with as few inclusions as possible, the excited atoms on either side of the interface are able to intermix and diffuse between themselves and be bonded as if one piece. So why is it so bloody difficult to bond steel to titanium? When pressure's applied, the asperities deform and the oxides still shatter. The metals do come into atomic contact, but the titanium and the iron react together to make an intermetallic compound, TiFe, at the joint interface, and it is weak and brittle. And that's no good because we want strong joints. So how might we solve this problem? Hopefully with the use of an interlayer. If the interlayer has good bonding characteristics with steel and good bonding characteristics with titanium and stops any interdiffusion between steel and titanium making that nasty intermetallic compound, we should be able to get them to bond together. 6 years ago, we tried to bond titanium to steel and we saw it fail. You have seen the TiFe intermetallic compound because that is exactly what we saw when we had our squirting incident in episode one of Titanium Damascus. What came out is TiFe, and it was thanks to your help in the comments that we figured out what on earth this stuff was and why it was liquid. This stuff melts at like 1050 degrees Celsius, and so even though those two materials melt at a much hotter temperature, once those atoms have reacted together, they melt lower and out they squirt. And so the two key variables that we're going to be experimenting with today are the material choice for the interlayer and its thickness. So let's show you what we've got. Billet one is 0.1 millimeter copper, 0.7 millimeter, 2 millimeter. This next one's expensive. This is a 2 millimeter sheet of nickel. It cost £429. That's our nickel. Pure silver. That's 0.3 millimeters. Of course, last one's gold. I think this is gonna be the thinnest thing that I have in the entire workshop. How do you even get it off? That is very thin. Now gonna cut our 1080 steel. This is a lot of stuff. Our sandwich, steel in the middle, interlayer either side, grade 2 titanium either side of it, and just for fun, grade 5 on the outside. That is going to be our forbidden sandwich. But I'd really like to have more consistent surface finishes, especially on the steel, because it comes from the mill a lot rougher than the titanium did. I have to say, one of my favorite parts about this experiment and this video is the fact that we've been putting our new tools to great use. The guillotine has been amazing. Our extractor means it's so fresh in here, and it's time to finish rounding it out with the use of our surface grinder, because at last, oh my gosh, packing peanuts. Our gigantic 300 millimeter grinding wheel has arrived for it. In order to get those bits ready, we have to get the surface grinder on the ground, leveled out, then using the balancing arbor that we made in part 2 of getting all these machines, we need to get the wheel balanced with its flange by moving around these tiny little weights inside. And when it's good, it can go onto the machine, where the first thing that we grind isn't any workpiece. It is, in fact, the magnetic chuck, which is currently rusted, corroded, and nasty. We need to grind it true to the action of the table. And only when that is done and we redress the wheel can we get those bits of material on here.
Shiny. Apart from these spots, but I don't see any sense in getting all the way down to the level of that. Just thinning out the mag chuck for little gain at that point. These go over there. These things are looking beautiful.
With that, all we've got to do now is finish up the boxes, get the pipe on them to purge the argon through, clean up the pieces, and seal them up.
Guys. Wow, this is not going to be easy. Don't want to have to put this stuff on it. I don't want that in the billet. I'm going to have to use this thicker gold leaf. Let's get the forge hot.
They are all ready to go in the forge, but what are the key variables in diffusion bonding? Of course, the material. But we've got that covered. That's what we're testing. Temperature, pressure, time, atmosphere, surface finish. Now, on the note of temperature, one of the variables we can control, the research discusses temperatures in the range of 700 to 900. Even though it feels in my belly like it's far too cold, we're gonna try 850 degrees Celsius for this entire batch. This is a Type K thermocouple. Cheap thing from Amazon. This is 1100 bloody degrees. Turns out the gas forge doesn't like being at 850 degrees Celsius. It's too cold for it to stay there reliably. So we're gonna do something that you should definitely not do at home. Billet one, 0.1 millimeter copper interlayer is now entering the kiln. It's been in the oven for 10 minutes and it's definitely up to temperature because it's an even color between the oven and the material. Turn on the hydraulic press. This is experiment one, 0.1 millimeter copper, here we go. It is so much less dramatic when it's not very hot. Second heat. And our third heat, we're gonna bring it to size with the power hammer. Here we go. Put it down to 7.6 millimeters. We'll let them slowly cool here in the back of the forge. This is number two, 0.7 millimeter copper interlayer. Billet three. Billet four. Billet five. Billet six, gold leaf.
inside. You can see the gold foil.
That's nuts.
That is actually the first of any of the interlayers that I've seen during the forging process. Now here's the deal. Being able to let your creativity run free and explore your craft to the fullest requires money. And in order to make that money, and I want you to make a lot of it, you need to have your systems dialed for bringing it in and showcasing your work to the people that need to see it. And for that, you need a great website, and that's where Squarespace comes in. They are today's sponsor. I've been using them for over a decade, and as a scruffy, cash-strapped 17-year-old, being able to make a beautiful website by myself was essential. In the early days, I had to be very flexible in what my business was doing, because it constantly evolved from one thing to the next thing, and my website did too with Squarespace. But in that decade, it has got even more powerful. Tools that I wish I had now exist. You can use Squarespace AI to help write website pages, product descriptions, as we demonstrated a month ago. This can save you crazy amounts of time so that you can do what you want to be doing, which is being on the tools, making the things you love to make. You can sell unlimited physical or digital products, sell access to paywall, members-only content, and sell your time using Squarespace's super intuitive Squarespace scheduling, all while having your work beautifully displayed on one of their countless drag-and-drop themes that scale fantastically from mobile to computer. So go to squarespace.com/forge, where you're going to get a 2-week free trial to see if you love it, and then code FORGE at checkout will get you 10% off your first order. That includes your domain purchase. The link is in the description. The next step is being able to see inside of all these billets and also be able to test the material and see if it's strong enough for what we want to do. What I want is 4 rectangles out of everything. And fortunately, last week, Wazer kindly sent us just the machine for doing that. We got a water jet cutter. What? How did you get in there?
Durban.
Pretty cool, huh?
It wasn't just a couple of weeks ago I was talking about how all machines should be designed around how they're gonna be lifted. Check this.
The side of the crate is an integrated ramp and is built to be moved on the pallet truck.
I'm now gonna decide where she is going to live. I've been thinking about moving the jewelry bench back into the office for a while. Maybe it could go up against this wall. I think this might be the spot. Goodness. Got it filled with water and leveled. Now we've just got to switch it on, purge the various systems, make sure there is no air in this, and then I put the included SD card in the machine, and hopefully the first thing we cut is this little datum board. To start cutting, press start. Cut completed. Total cut time, 18 minutes. That is delightful. We water jet cut parts. This is now a frame that we can use as a datum when we're cutting other stuff. Now we're gonna cut something of our own.
Cut quality, medium. Got our estimated cost, generate job file.
Ooh.
Just gotta put it on the SD card. Clean this out, in goes the steel.
Oh my goodness! It's me touch mark.
Isn't she beautiful? Back to the topic at hand here. We gotta get these things ready to put in there. Now, I did a little test piece right here in some 7,000th shim steel. Planned out where we're gonna have little tabs. And that's gonna mean that we have symmetrical pieces across the entire range. So let's cut off these handles, make sure they're flat, mount them up. All right, close door. Start cut.
Oh my goodness. We just had it kick off. It's done.
What do we have?
Hurry up, man, I'm excited.
I'm trying, I gotta undo the screws.
Let's break it apart.
That is the side of our billet.
You can't see anything.
Look at that. So that is exactly why we can't weld steel straight to titanium, because that is the mild steel jacket that we made the protective box from, and it just snapped right off. That's crazy.
I'm excited.
Because it feels like
4 solid bits of metal. If you look ever so close, you can see titanium, copper, steel, copper, titanium.
It's not over till we test the stuff, right? But in order to do that, we need to finish the rest of them. So I'm gonna get billet number 2 loaded in the Wazer. Then we're gonna clean these up so that we can properly have a look at what we've got.
Do
That's crazy.
Look at that. You see there's like a bubble in the material. It has separated the mild steel jacket, filled it with pressured water, and then jammed the nozzle. That's hilarious. And a jam like that forces water up the abrasive tube, so I've got to clean that out and get back cutting.
Water jet hydroforming.
Oh, and it looks like it's stuck. Yes.
Just awesome.
Look at how wild that is.
No way. Billet 6 with the gold foil has completely split apart.
Oh!
Our first clear as day failure.
It didn't even make it to the stress testing. No.
This is going far better than I could have possibly expected. Only one failure. And in fact, the failure I'm most pleased to have. The gold leaf. And good riddance. Going into this, I was really hoping gold wasn't gonna be the best option, as it would make our future projects just that much more expensive.
But it looks like all of our copper examples, the nickel and the silver, have successfully bonded the steel to the titanium. We haven't tested the strength yet, but I have noticed an interesting phenomenon.
Across the 5 experiments, some of them have differing levels of sinusoidal waves running through the layers. Now, of course, there are a ton of variables that we haven't controlled for, such as how exactly I hammered them. So maybe I forged in those sinusoidal waves.
The most extreme waves were on the 2mm copper and 0.3mm silver.
So maybe it's just the power hammering that made the sinusoidal curves. Or another theory I have is that it might have something to do with the coefficient of thermal expansion.
When material gets hot, atoms start having a party and they make a little bit more space, metal get bigger.
But not all metals expand at the same rate. And the coefficient of thermal expansion, or the CTE, is the amount that a metal expands per degree of temperature. Check it out. Titanium has the lowest thermal expansion of all of the metals we're playing with, at 8.8 nanometers per meter per degree Celsius. 1080 steel, 11.7. Nickel, 13. Copper, 16. And the most, at a whopping 19, silver.
So all the stuff in our delightful sandwich is expanding as it gets hot and contracting as it gets cool at a different rate to one another. And so perhaps as we heat up our billet and weld it, the titanium hasn't expanded as much as the steel in the interlayer. And then once it's bonded and proceeds to cool, the titanium is being pulled from both sides as the steel and interlayer shrinks more than it, forcing the sinusoidal wave into our material.
Ultimately, I've got no idea.
I would love to hear your thoughts on this topic and everything that we're covering today. But now I think it's time for some stress tests. We've got 4 samples. The first is going to be a 90 degree bend. Drop these in the vise at the same height. I've got no idea if it's even going to survive a 90 degree bend. Sample number 1, bending. Oh, wow! Decimated it. That titanium could not handle the smoke.
Both the grade 2 and grade 5 shattered. So did the bond between the copper and the titanium.
There's nothing left of that. Next up. Oh, no, gosh.
At about the same angle as well.
But this time that didn't pop off. Interesting. Oh, it's better. Yes! Wow!
That withstood the crazy tensile stress here on the outside of the bend way better.
The titanium is plastically deformed. See if we can get the whole way to 90 degrees. Oh, brilliant.
Number 4.
Oh, it just fractured. Just at the final part of the bend.
Surprisingly good.
It does look like there's a slight delamination happening there.
Pause here if you can see my handwriting. The next thing that I want to try is hardening them. And the reason kind of goes back to the earlier topic of the coefficient of thermal expansion. Given that all these materials respond to heat differently, what happens when we have to quench it in order to harden the steel core? How is the joint interface going to react to an extreme thermal shock, where the titanium, the interlayer, and the steel are all trying to contract in different ways? The steel more than the titanium, the interlayers more than either of them. Are we just going to shear those bonds apart and add to our growing pile of scrap?
Oh no, I heard cracks. Oh, that's not good.
Oh,
no!
The first one has just split apart on the end.
It did not like that. It's getting worse and worse. Oh, that one looks like it might have survived. Very interesting that only sample one cracked. I'm gonna air out the oven, get it down to 250 degrees Celsius, 400 and something Fahrenheit, and we'll do some tempering cycles on the pieces. I know a lot of you guys know, but when you harden steel by quenching it, in this case in oil, it becomes incredibly brittle. But in order for it to be serviceable as a knife or a tool, we bring it up to a lower temperature, hold it there for a little while. That's called tempering, and the steel then regains a lot of toughness. Two tempering cycles are done. It's the next morning. From left to right, that is 1 through 5. Billet one is, of course, a complete failure in the quench, but the rest look pretty good apart from some oxides. Oh no, I think billet 5 has a crack in it. That's definitely a crack. It looks just like the silver is separated from the titanium. What about billet 4? Oh no, I think it might also be cracked. I can't tell if it's just oxidation or if it's separated from the steel and the nickel. Billet 3 still looks hopeful, but these hardened samples are going to need stress testing as well. See if we can expose any flaws. This is billet 2. Oh, not well, but I mean, we expect a certain amount of it. Considering it's now hardened. All right, this is billet 3. It's the one we're rooting for, Jamie. Oh, much better. Until it wasn't. I mean, I think that held up fairly well. But when it went, it resulted in a complete bond failure between the 2mm copper interlayer and the titanium jacket. We then got fracturing of the carbon steel in several places. Billet 4. Oh, very poor. Instant and catastrophic failure. Billet 5. Oh yeah, oh we knew it. Absolutely exactly what we suspected from the microscope. The silver interlayer had completely separated from the titanium in the hardening. It just hadn't popped apart like billet 1. So we put all of these samples through a lot of stress, and effectively every single one, apart from our unhardened bend test of billet 3 with the 2mm copper interlayer, failed. As far as science goes, an experiment with like a sample size of 1 probably doesn't reach the highest caliber of science. But very interesting to me nevertheless, and given our goal of wanting to be able to make a Sanmai style blade with a titanium jacket and a carbon steel edge, I would love to hear from you. What tests do you think would be important to run on any of the remaining pieces? And more importantly, what do you think we could do to help refine the process? We love hearing from you guys in the comments. It is a sincere pleasure to be able to experiment like this. And that's all thanks to you watching, and also all thanks to today's sponsor, which was Squarespace. Check them out at the link in the description. Build your website with them. Bye-bye.